And we are back with episode 430 of The Critical Myth. I am John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and I sure am happy that at least somebody north of the border knows how to wrap things up properly.
Gary from Jacksonville, and I'm just a sucker for a happy ending.
Yeah, and all I can say is you know, I'm feeling a hankering for chicken. Not sure why. Very odd. Anyway, we are going to be talking about three shows this time around, and I'll kind of keep you in suspense as to what those are. But this is a little bit unusual for us because we're recording this before I go off to PAX East, so we're going to have a limited number of choices for this particular episode. So there we are. I still have to catch up, guys. I'm a little bit behind, and we're recording earlier than usual. But before we do any of that, Edmund, if you could please.
We will discuss just about anything we like about our limited choices here, so you will be horribly, terribly spoiled. But we've tried to leave almost exactly a week in this case before we do that, so we certainly hope you've had time to catch up.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, that all being said, I suppose, Gary, what would you like to have as our first topic of conversation tonight? On this list of three shows that I gave you.
Well, we just got to work through it because I'm really sad. I was really sad to watch the final episode of this series. It's come so far and been so good that I regret having it no longer to look forward to new episodes with it. I felt they went out very nicely, and the names at the end were so cute. Anyway, I'm talking, of course, about Being Human.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and run the promo.
Sorrow, Nostrum. Guys, I love you.
I'm afraid to die!
The series finale of Being Human, this Monday at 9, only on Sci-Fi.
All right, and if you could do the recap for us, Gary.
Absolutely. We're talking about Being Human, Season 4, Episode 13, There Goes the Neighborhood, Part 3. In the series finale, Sally makes a huge sacrifice to keep her vision of Aiden killing Josh from coming true. And that, in turn, changes Aiden's life forever as he fights to destroy the house's evil spirit. Meanwhile, Josh and Nora imagine their future roles as parents.
Mm-hmm. And what would you give this one, do you think?
Jeez. I will give it a 9.
Okay. Remember, we could do half points if you want to revise that at all.
No, I'll stay with a 9. It was okay. An extremely solid episode, but it just... 9.
Okay, Edmund?
I am also at a 9.
All right, and I gave it a 10. So there we are. Well, Gary, I mean, certainly you made this your first choice, so why don't you get us started?
Gosh.
Already kind of did, so...
Gosh, where to start? So many things happened in this episode. We'll start off with where they got free of the house. They were able to, you know, get out of it and, you know, move on with their lives, and that seemed like it might be something. But, again, the house came calling back, and they ended up burning it down to solve it. So, in a way, what brought them together also, finished out the series as well, which is a sort of nice little loop back into itself, I suppose. The biggest shocker was we got, we've had our characters fall in and out of their powers. You know, Sally's become human. Josh has lost his lycanthropy, so, you know, he was normal again. But we never got Aiden normal until this episode. You know, Sally's sacrifice to some extent brought him back to human, albeit not in perfect health or for long. But nevertheless, we got our final main character's humanity back for at least a little while. And it turned out he didn't like it that much. He didn't like it at all. You know, all those hundreds of years of tortured soul, just Aiden pretty much had enough. And that was the sense we got. And he needed, you know, a hard ending. And thankful and nice enough, he got his door as well. It was an old-fashioned sort of colonial-style door. I thought that was a nice touch. I was wondering what kind of door they would present him with. given his long life, but I thought that was a nice touch. And we got his happy ending. He went through the doorway and met Sally, and you know, and they were happy. Nora and Josh also, you know, got their happy ending too, as they're sitting there talking. You didn't know if it was a few weeks afterwards or a few months afterwards. We go on to find it several years later for them, and they had a boy and a girl, and they named them Sally and Aiden, and I just thought that was so sweet. It was the perfect closing. In a sense, they're all still together again.
Yeah, I mean, it was, for me, I just love the fact that, you know, we had that episode a couple episodes ago where Josh essentially got to the end of his growth. I shouldn't say the end, but he kind of culminated in his growth as far as coming to terms with the wolf. And, you know, he and Nora had to have their moment of reconciliation, and that essentially took place. We needed to kind of have the closure with Sally and with Aiden. And I think that Sally's took place effectively over the last couple episodes, and maybe even this season was really her coming to the realization that, you know, she was known for pulling a Sally, really, and always jumping into things without really thinking them through. But I think she finally made that choice at the beginning of this episode that she had to make, which was to save Josh and Aiden, for that matter, by restoring his humanity. And, you know, part of it too was that they had introduced this whole idea of Aiden and Sally being together, but by the rules of the game, there was really no way for them to do that. This kind of was the only way to do it, and I didn't feel like it was a cheat. It worked. It kind of made sense. And for that matter, it also made sense for Aiden to only have so long before his age caught up with him. It was enough to just kind of bring things to an end. It made him the perfect one to go to the house and deal with that issue. And kind of, like you said, he was the last one to regain his humanity on several levels at the end of the story. And so for that to happen concurrent with the house being burnt down, really as, again, a sacrificial moment, not a, oh, woe is me, I've got to, you know, be taken out because I'm too much of a danger to everybody else kind of thing, like a certain other version of Being Human did with their main vampire character. Anyway, but it was also, you know, it was heroic. He had kind of, he found a way to redeem all the things that he had done by saving who knows how many people in the future and effectively giving Josh and Nora that opportunity to have the family that they should have. And yeah, it made perfect sense for them to kind of go out with Josh and Nora and the children. So yeah, I completely agree as far as that's concerned. Edmund, how about you?
Nine versus a ten?
Come on, baby.
What kept it to a nine for me was actually the whole sequence at the beginning, with how quickly, even though I do take your point that Sally's journey has been going on all season and she really had reached this point where it did make sense for her to do what she did, but to me, it still felt a little too much. It's not quite Deus Ex Machina, but it all happened so quickly at the beginning, and having her not there for so much of the episode, I still wound up missing her presence. And there was also part of me that the moment it happened and Aiden had become mortal, I kind of saw the entire track playing out in front of me, and even though I agree with you, this was the only way that they could stay true to that connection they had and still bring it to a resolution that made sense within the framework of the story. It wound up feeling just a little bit too pat for me, it was a sort of thing where I was going through the episode sort of half feeling the emotion, but kind of still feeling outside of it. And the fact that it wasn't quite hitting me as hard as I was expecting it to is what kind of dropped it for me. I felt like I was a little too far ahead of them. And even though the performances were wonderful, and I thought Sam Witwer did a fabulous job transitioning into human aging Aiden, and certainly the symbology of him falling down the stairs into exactly the Sally death position, and then flipping out the lighter, was wonderfully done. There was just overall, it wasn't quite having as much impact as I was hoping it would. So I guess it's basically it's losing a point for slightly not delivering what I expected it to.
Yeah, I for me, I guess it really was just I was worried that they wouldn't be able to stick the landing. I guess that's what it was. I mean, there were so many ways that this could have gone wrong. I mean, we've seen plenty of shows get right to the very end, seem to be leading up to a really strong and fitting finale, and then blow it. So for me, this felt like when they said that they were driving to this situation at the during the last five or six episodes, I really felt like that's exactly what was going on. And I get your point that you could kind of see exactly how it was going to track through the episode, but at the same time, it felt earned. It wasn't a cheat, which is what I was kind of, in a way, that's what I was worried about that they would do, and then that would kind of sully the final episode, because I was really worried they would break their own rules to try and find a way to do something. But they actually just used what was already established and just put a slight twist on it within the context of what we had already seen. So for me, it really was just, it took all the different pieces of the concept and nailed it. You know, basically you had, if the whole idea was them to kind of transcend their monstrous sides to become human, that's effectively what they did. And they had their redemptions as they went along. And I get the idea about, you know, okay, Sally was only at the very beginning, but what more was there really to do with her?
Yeah, it's been such a Sally-focused season that I didn't feel, you know, left out, or gosh, if only they had resolved something more with her. You know, they've covered it all with her as far as I was concerned. I didn't need any more growth, realizations, or resolutions for her. We'd pretty much hit everything.
Yeah, I guess I'm realizing as we talk about it, part of it is I'm so used to Sally pulling a Sally. It was almost shocking to have her be that competent at the beginning of the episode and be able to both get the three of them out of there into the basement, and then, you know, and then as you say, John, it's been fully established that yes, she's had all the spells burned into her, and then to just be able to pull on that knowledge to just bring the vampirism out of Aiden and sacrifice herself in doing so. Yeah, I mean, it is completely fitting, but it was all just happening so fast that my head was just spinning for a bit there, because I'm not used to expecting that of Sally.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I guess for her, the purpose of her arc, I guess another reason that I wasn't too worried about it is that earlier in the season, you essentially had her using the magic to try and draw Josh out of the monster. And it didn't work out very well because of the way that she did things. So I felt like that was, again, redeeming her in that she was willing to give everything in order to do it correctly for Aiden.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it definitely feels like they had this all in mind the entire season, that the character arcs were very consistent. Probably the most consistent they've been. But that's one thing that this series has always had over the British original, is that they actually had some fairly substantial character growth and progression and weren't just kind of flailing about. Let's see, what else to really say about this?
I want to just talk for a second about what I felt was one of the weak points as well.
Oh,
it was this whole house concept. I mean, I guess they needed some sort of antagonist or something like that, but it still seemed like a bit of a cheat to pull this concept out at the end like this, that we had no, you know, no idea that the house was evil or manipulative or anything like that till these last few episodes. I wish there was some precursor earlier on about that. And that did feel like a bit of a cheat to me, unlike some, you know, most of the other things in this episode.
Yeah, I think, though, that was more of a, at least from my side of it, it was more of a hit on the previous episodes, even though it didn't bother me as much as it did you, I know. But, like, last episode, I think it would have been more fitting to really hit them for that one, because this time, I mean, they established it a couple episodes ago.
Yeah.
And really kind of hit it hard last time, last episode, which again was more Sally's thing, I think, because it was all about her being the first to recognize what was going on and basically saving everybody else. But then this episode didn't really add anything new to the house thing. It was just, it was playing on it. It was resolving it. So I get the, I get the fact that, yeah, in retrospect, I definitely feel like they knew where they were going all season long, because of course the girl was established all the way back in the premiere. But I think that the whole house thing could have and probably should have been established before now, because I think that for the season as a whole, I think that you're right that it is late in the game to be introducing something that's supposed to be fairly fundamental to the whole idea. It's kind of like the whole, you know, like retrospectively coming up with the plan for the Cylons. Just
there was never a plan for the Cylons. Anyway,
exactly.
I agree. It's just, yeah. Couldn't they have just lit the house from the outside? You know?
Well, that, you know, you got to give the guy his moment.
Oh, yeah.
Come on, Aiden's been a drama queen the entire time.
That's true.
You think he's going to go out easy? Well, what this really amounts to is that this season came out with an average of 8.3 mm-hmm. by our old measure. And that is the highest scored season of the four. In fact, this is a show that, from our perspective, improved each and every year. So mm-hmm. that's something to be said. And so by the new way of looking at it, this would come out around a B+, which does have that room for a bit of improvement in the consistency of, say, things like the house being sentient and connected to demonic forces and whatnot. But one of the things I did want to kind of mention is that, number one, the ratings for this show were fairly consistent from a sci-fi point of view. But from what I understand, when they realized that the producers and the cast were effectively told that they wanted to renew the show for 2 seasons, so a fourth and fifth season, but they were going to slash the budget tremendously to do that. The cast actually... basically, depending on how you read into it, either gave up part of their salary or actually helped fund just one more season at the current budgetary level so that they could go out at the same standard of quality that they had the 3 seasons before. So, to me, that is just kind of reminiscent, I think, of another show that we all know and love in terms of the cast really just loving being on the show and being part of that and just wanting to and being willing to take that kind of personal investment in order to see it through to the proper end.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I'm glad you brought that up because I wanted to mention it as well, because it's one of those things where it was something that was becoming obvious certainly through the second and third seasons and then into this one that this was one of those shows where the cast just really loved what they were doing and playing. They weren't just playing these friendships; they were really living these friendships off camera, and it was just shining through on the screen. And I do take hats off to them. And I know Sam Witwer's interviews after the finale, he's gone out of his way to also praise Sci-Fi for going along with it. And certainly all the discussions we've had in terms of the new funding model and this whole difficulty of smaller cable shows like this going into the fourth and fifth season. I mean, I think this just really just serves as just the latest example of that. And I was very, very happy that that they were able to work this out and give us a good solid final season and finale for once, rather than this whole, oh no, by the way, guys, you're going to be off in 3 episodes and just try and wrap it up if you can. So it was really nice to see. And just in terms of that whole family connection, I do want to mention that young Sally and young Aiden are in fact Sam Huntington's actual kids.
Wow.
Are they all? That's...
That just puts a poignant little capstone on the whole series, doesn't it? I was alluding to it a little bit, but I think I'll wait until I write up my my kind of season retrospective on Being Human and series retrospective for that matter, that I really feel like this version nailed the concept far better than the British original, which is such a rare thing for us to say.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that they could exceed their originating show in, you know, not only length, but quality as well. So
yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, I will mention that it is rare, but it does sometimes happen. But I never quite expected Being Human to be the 21st century All in the Family.
No, that's for sure. Okay, well, we can go ahead then and move on to our next topic. And Edmund, it is your choice this time.
Let us talk about the other finale on the list, Lost Girls season finale.
Okie dokie, let's go ahead and run the promo.
Everyone is dead, except for the guy who should be.
Sunday on Showcase.
All I want is you, dead.
Desperate times.
He's basically invincible, he won't die.
Call for desperate measures.
Who is he, Bo?
Someone even the Blood King fears. I feel so powerful.
You're channeling his energy through the portal.
Many more will die if we don't close the gateway.
It is the only way Bo can save the world.
Lost Girl, season finale Sunday at 10, exclusively on Showcase, where character is everything.
All right, and if you could do the recap, please.
Absolutely. Lost Girl, season 4, episode 13, Dark Horse. Bo struggles with the toughest decision of her life and resorts to desperate measures to prevent evil from overtaking the world in the season 4 finale.
Mm-hmm. And what would you give this one?
I will give this a 6.5.
Okay. And Gary?
I have to get used to these decimals, but I will go with a 7.
Okay, as will I. All right, well, Edmund, why don't you go ahead and get us started? You had the lowest of the three scores, and it sounds like it actually comes out to a very average finale, so I don't know how much we really need to delve into it, but what were your highlights, lowlights? Take your pick.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, I mean, it's just my general thing that was keeping the rating low was I was getting this strange sense of deja vu of Lost Girl once again having this big finale where you're supposed to be up against a big foe, and they weren't dashing around basements like they were, I guess it was back in end of season 2, but it kind of had that same feeling of here they were trying to fight against the Hell Hordes, and it was our cast doing stunt work against a bunch of extras in a dark soundstage, because they still haven't quite adjusted to the fact that they have these budgetary restrictions. They need to try and shape the story to match those. They keep trying to go for these big over the top things, and as I've said before, they've got a wonderful cast and great character interactions, and it would be nice to see them actually use that rather than thinking they have to go for the big bang ending. And then, of course, there's the person we lost, which they better correct real quickly when we come back. So that's another discussion, which everyone will get into.
Yeah, I don't know how much we really need to. I think that you put it fairly well. The character work was pretty good. Kenzie and where she kind of fell in at this point in the wake of Hale's demise a couple episodes ago, I thought made lots of sense and gave us a really good cliffhanger. I thought that some of the things that they did in terms of the visuals at the very end were pretty neat. And if I'm recalling correctly, and I hope I'm not somehow mixing it up with a flashback from another episode, but this was the one where Tamsin in her Valkyrie mode towards the end of this one?
Yes, we got to see the wings. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I thought that was rather nicely done. There were some fairly, you know, mythical illusions going on there, but this season arc has been such a mess that it was hard to really get behind the conclusion. It was supposedly apocalyptic and all that, but it's kind of was dependent on so many things that were just pulled out of nowhere that, yeah, it just never really gelled for me. So I balanced the good of the character work against the not so good of the season arc resolution. How about you, Gary? I mean, what would you add to that?
Wait a minute. Did they kill off Kenzie? Did I get that right? She's not just going off to some mythical place, but she's dead?
She sacrificed herself with the intention, I guess you could say, that her friends would be able to reverse the process.
Who was the ad wizard who thought this one up? The most popular character in the entire show when they kill her off. I tell you, like you were saying, if they don't bring her back, I will be quite upset. No, I really don't have any real intentions about Bo at this point. You know, that the character's been so mismanaged that, you know, I don't know anybody who's really enjoying her characterization anymore. I think most people are watching her for Kenzie now.
Yeah, I think you'd be right. Yeah, this is basically, you know, all the people that are screaming that if Daryl Dixon dies on The Walking Dead, then they're never going to watch the show again. This is Lost Girl calling that bluff.
But I know what you're saying. They just never felt like it gelled this season. You know, we got Rainer, who I never really got a feel for. I was trying to think of, like, another character they introduced, and I go back to thinking of Vex. And after even two shows, you were really sort of, you know, invested in the character, and you really enjoyed him. But Rainer, I still don't have a sense of the guy.
Yeah, this is one of those weird situations where I think our overall feeling of the or sense of the season is fairly average and kind of, I guess you could say that we're going out on a little bit of a blah note. And yet, if you look at the episode by episode kind of reactions and scores that we were giving, there actually, it all comes out to this being the highest scored season of Lost Girl so far. What that tells me is that if they could just get the story straight, they keep improving. Certainly since that mess that was the second season, they've improved since then, but it's almost like they can't quite bring the story together.
Yeah, I think something, just thinking about the season, that there's something going on where they did this great job of getting that core cast together and getting those characters and relationships set, and then they've been having a really hard time bringing in new characters. Whether it was the new Ash in season two, and in this season, it certainly appears the intention was we were supposed to get fully invested in Bo and Rainer being this committed couple to each other, and it just never felt that way at all.
No.
And then certainly the whole thing with Massimo, bringing him in and then having him tossed into the fiery pit, and then bringing him back, and again in this episode where he's supposed to be this big threat because he's eaten this nut that gives him all the powers, except he's got all these powers raging around inside of him that he can't control, so Bo winds up defeating him rather easily, it seemed. or certainly with Lauren on the sidelines to help. So it's in terms of whether it's new allies or new villains, they just haven't been able to replicate that early success.
Well, you know, this uber villain after uber villain, and as you said, Massimo fell well short of that, but I don't see how they could continue to trump themselves with the new villain that's going to destroy the world as we know it. You know, we've had, I think, by my count, at least five of them in this series so far, and it's, they're going to the well a little too often in that one. You know, we could handle, I think, some sort of, like, intermediate-powered villain that's not going to destroy the world once in a while, but they don't seem to want to go there.
Yeah, I almost feel like they need to focus on next season, just focus on, say, something as small in scale as just the politics among the Fae.
Well, I was going to say the power struggle that we had early on with the Ash in the first season or two was I thought was compelling. It was interesting. You know, even when they brought in, you know, the dark side with Ebony and all that, even that wasn't that bad. But when they started getting uber villain after uber villain, there's no scale for you to judge against anymore, unfortunately.
Yeah, so they need to kind of scale back. And that also might help with that whole budgetary thing that Edmund brought up at the beginning, that if they can kind of scale it properly so that the story has enough room to breathe, but also doesn't try to exceed its constraints. But like I said, it came in this season at a 7.4. which is the highest scored season yet, but that still is only a B minus by our new scoring reckoning over on VogNetwork.com. So it's not too high above the average, but you know, it's still got plenty of room to improve. So hopefully next time it will.
Yeah, I don't want Fae of the Week, but it's just, they got to work on it.
Yeah. Well, I think that we'll go ahead and take our mid-show break, and when we return, I think there's this other show that came back that maybe we should start talking about again. A little show, not very big at all. Not, you know.
You have to poke my memory, I can't recall.
Exactly. Okay, and we are back from that musical interlude, and we are going to talk about Game of Thrones. So here's the promo.
The people love their king.
They know I saved the city. They know I won the war.
The war's not won. Run from the
light. It's tempting to see your enemies as evil. But there's good and evil on both sides in every war ever fought. Deep in the water.
They have a choice. They can live in my new world, or they can die in their old one.
Things are a bit tense right now.
I don't think I'm talking my way out of this one.
If the Wildlings breach the wall, they'll roll over everything and everyone.
Given the opportunity, what do we do to those who've hurt the ones we love?
I want to know which side you're on.
Tell your father I'm here.
And tell him the Lannisters are the only ones who pay their debts.
You'll fight over him like beasts until you tear him apart. I will burn our house to the ground before I let that happen.
Bullers! Tonight we fight!
There's only one hell. The one we live in now.
You've come to the wrong place.
All right, and let's see. I guess I should take this one, right? Let's
go for it, John.
Turnabout is fair play. Game of Thrones, Season 4, Episode 1, Two Swords. In the Season 4 premiere, Tyrion welcomes a surprise guest to King's Landing for the royal wedding, but fears he's come to the Red Keep for something else. Meanwhile, Jon warns his skeptical Night's Watch superiors about an impending attack. Jaime struggles to regain his status at home, Arya encounters a face from her past, and Dario Naharis discusses strategy with Daenerys on the journey to the slave city, Meereen. All right, just a few little minor points there to discuss, but I give this one an 8.5. Gary, how about you? What would you give this?
I am going to give it a 9.5. I liked it a lot.
Woohoo! All right, and Edmund?
And I will agree with your 8.5.
Okay, and as we, as I had promised, we are going to change things up slightly because we do have actually some commentary over on VogNetwork.com.
Hey!
Yay, that's right. And our friend Akdeft from a number of different shows on the VOG Network in terms of contributing some commentary gave this one a concurring opinion, but he went all the way to an A+. So he gave it effectively a 10. So let's say his comment here was, I saw this episode since for a strange reason HB... This I mispronounce after that entire... Okay. After, for a strange reason, HBO and its other channels was unlocked, so I tuned in to see what the hype was all about. I must say that this episode alone got me really interested in watching what has happened before this and what happens after this. So yeah, for a newcomer, this was an excellent episode. Oh, Akdeft, I strongly suggest before you watch the next episode that you get caught up. There's just a few things that are definitely going to happen very, very soon. But thank you for your comment there. We this is one of the more popular reviews that have gone up on VogNetwork.com. Quite a few views, so thank you for everybody who took a look at it. But I'm also going to make this a nice little cheat sheet for me as we go through here. So as we've done before with Game of Thrones, rather than get everybody's impressions of the episode one by one, which would take everyone way too long, we're going to take this piece by piece. So, starting with the Lannisters. Yay! How about Jaime?
Oh, poor Jaime. rejected, yeah.
Yeah, I guess he now knows what it's like to be treated like Tyrion. But, yeah, I mean, obviously we've got some changes that he has to deal with as far as how he's being treated by his family. And Gary, I know that you're not quite up on the books. Obviously, you've been trying to catch up, but it's a daunting task. So, what were your impressions of what happened in this episode with Jaime?
Oh, with Jaime? Well, I thought it was interesting that his father was sort of willing to turn over the whole ancestral home over to him, and obviously he didn't want to do that because Cersei was staying at the head of the country there.
King's Landing.
King's Landing. So he was rejecting that. But at the same time, I thought it was a rather magnanimous offer. Of course, the father pretty much hates everybody, including his own family. So, you know, it's not surprising that he takes jabs at Jaime's missing hand and things along those lines. Although, I mean, I thought getting that sword specially made from him from Ned Stark's old sword, while sort of reprehensible in one way, was more of an honorific thing. It was, I guess, the only sign of respect the father could really show for his sons, and he was doing it. So I thought there was something there, even if it wasn't verbally expressed. And you know, it was a shame that Jaime didn't want to take him up on that offer. It might not have been a bad life, or at least better than what he's got at the moment. So yeah, I thought it was sort of a nice little mini arc where he was handed everything to some extent and rejected it for love and turned out to be rejected as well. So
how about you, Edmund?
Yeah, I guess I did take Tyrion's offer as more wanting to shunt him off to the sidelines. That at this point, I mean, it's hard for me to separate in terms of, you know, yes, I have read all of the books to date. So I'm not, this is one of those things where it gets difficult for me to know. I think that was there in Charles Dance's performance, but certainly the way it was the having the scene with Tyrion happen, where he still doesn't have the golden hand, where he's literally there with his stump, it did seem to me to be emphasizing that Tyrion is not so happy with having his golden boy be so impaired now.
I think Tywin, by the way.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
things are incestuous in the family, but not
that incestuous. Yes, yeah. I know. The point of all of this, what was both emphasizing how his status within the family has drastically changed, but at the same time, it was also, I thought it was a very nice reflection of how Jaime's own attitudes have changed. He was obviously hurt by it, but you almost got this sense of him philosophical about what was happening rather than raging against it, as you kind of feel the Jaime we met at the beginning of the series might have.
Yeah, he even managed to kind of deal with Joffrey's barbs, mm-hmm. relative, you know, indifference. Although that was probably the one that hurt the most. But yeah, I mean, we've got, you know, Jaime back. Tywin is obviously not really giving any type of, you know, quarter at all to anybody, including Jaime, despite the sacrifices that he made. If anything, reminding Jaime of all the things that he, you know, all the honor that he could and should have had. But then we have, as I like to call it, Mr. Exposition for this particular episode, which was Oberyn Martell. Yes. Arriving, which was nice for him to kind of give us a recap of how the families are all interconnected, and oh, that little thing about Rhaegar, which may be particularly important. But just about the fact that Rhaegar was married to his sister, and his sister was the one that was murdered during the rebellion and raped and so forth. And yeah, there aren't too many Baratheons around for him to go revenge himself upon, so hey, look at all these Lannisters hanging out in King's Landing these days.
and we know the Lannisters were the power behind it anyway.
So. Indeed. So yeah, how about Oberyn? What are your thoughts on him, Gary?
Oh, I like the character. I thought, you know, as they go on with the seasons and they have to bring new people in and, you know, stir up storylines a bit, I liked him. I thought some of his choices were unexpected, but at the same time, it's nice to see somebody with machinations against the Lannisters that isn't such an enemy that, you know, they have to literally fight him, but he's close, and now it's more of a, you know, keeping their eye on him because he could stab them in the back very easily. So I like that, more of the intrigue as opposed to the lines of battle that are probably going to come up with this. So, yeah, it was good. I'm looking forward to his interactions with it. He makes everyone seem very uncomfortable, which I enjoy.
Let's see. Anything we want to add to that, Edmund, as far as Oberyn's concerned?
I did enjoy the Dornish people getting introduced and getting that sense of them being the more southerly inhabitants of Westeros, and in the European context, and people have often compared them more to like the Spanish or the Italians, having that sort of darker, more swashbuckling air to them, and I thought all that was conveyed very well. And I loved that that whole setup for before Tyrion this time, actually Tyrion, greeting them outside of King's Landing, and just how they really got that whole sense of, yes, this is really kind of a snub that we're just sending Tyrion out, and there are all these people just milling about them. There's no special stand set up or anything. It's just like, yes, we're just here on the road to meet you. So I thought that was rather well done.
Speaking of Tyrion, trouble at home, mm-hmm. As one would expect, but maybe not quite this much. Shay annoys me in this episode so much. I don't even know how else to put it. I mean, talk about someone who just isn't giving anyone a break, even though the situation should be obvious by now. You know, it's like, it's not like he wants to be married to Sansa. I mean, it's not like Sansa's doing anything to give him remotely a chance to even be nice to her.
Mm-hmm.
And yet he might as well be, you know, tossing her aside as far as Shay is concerned. But Gary, how about you? Your reactions to this at all?
Oh yeah, no. It was interesting. You know, he been so smooth with women for a while. Now he's sort of stuck against the wall. In both cases, his wife is nearly suicidal, as best I can tell, and his mistress, is fed up with the situation. She wants. I think she'd be happy if they went away again, as he had proposed earlier. It's nice to, as I said, it's nice to see people squirm. I don't think anyone at all is really happy in this episode. I don't, you know, it's pretty much, you know, misery after misery, but that could be a good setup. So I have my hopes.
Mm. All right. Well, meanwhile, in King's Landing, we have a few little subplots that we probably don't need to get into too much, but we have the Tyrells are preparing for the wedding. Mm-hmm. It's always good to see Natalie Dormer for even just a slight little bit of time.
Yeah. And Diana Rigg, if only for her reaction to Brienne.
Yes, exactly. I was about to get there. But yeah, we had two little pieces of exposition from those characters. For Olenna, we had Diana Rigg's character. basically reminding us about the fact that they're fully aware of just how much of an ass Joffrey is. And then Brienne got to remind everybody about what went down with Renly and the shade of Stannis and everything else, and kind of reminded Jaime a bit about his vows and honor, which was a nice little touch on Jaime's side of things. So am I forgetting anything in King's Landing of note?
I don't think so. No.
Okay. Well, then let's go ahead and move over across the sea to Essos, and we have Daenerys getting ready to march on Meereen, and she's got big problems. Three of them, in fact. And they're hungry. Very, very hungry.
Well, you know, they like to go out for a burger. Well, in this case, the whole cow. But
yeah.
And they can even do their own charbroiling. So.
Yes, they can do their own barbecue. You know, it's really unfortunate because Jorah, for all the fact that he, as one person put it, I think this was on TV.com, it is the best nickname for him ever, Lord Friendzone. but it's so true. But at any rate, you know, he's sitting there trying to make a point, like, you may be the mother of dragons, but they're still dragons. And yet, she might as well be sitting there with a flower being like, Dario loves me, Dario loves me not, Dario loves me. I mean, she's not paying attention at all. Every once in a while she tries, but it's always like, I wonder where Dario is.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder where he is. Yeah, this is not going to end well. just, I don't I don't like Dario, but Gary, yeah, your thoughts on Dario, or Edmund, go ahead.
Yeah, well, no, it just has to be said that yes, she's so obsessed that she doesn't even notice that he's dyed his hair and gotten darker in the time since we've been away.
But, if we didn't know any better, we'd thought that he was one of the faceless ones. But nope, it's not a plot point. The other guy was just way too much of the stereotype, so they had to recast.
Yes, but it did amuse me how they did have that whole him and Grey Worm having their little macho battle just so it could be his name could be said, so that, in case anybody was going to get confused. It's like, yes, that's Dario now.
You mean they didn't have to stop and just put a sign over his head with an arrow going ding?
Oh, you say that, but that whole scene where, whoever's still holding the sword and they both drop it. Yeah. They've been holding it for hours.
Simultaneously, yes.
That was a cute little end to their competition.
Yes. Hey, someone like Daenerys tells you to do something, you're going to do it. One thing I really did like was, as they're on the road to Meereen, and I don't even know how you're supposed to say it. Hopefully someone will actually pronounce the damn name of the town soon. But at any rate, in the book, there's way too many E's in this name. I'll just put it that way. The thing where they had the people, the girl hanging, pointing in the direction, that was right out of the book. And I thought that was a nice touch that they actually went there.
Yeah, I was surprised they were going to show that. So
yeah, but as far as what's going on with Daenerys, any other thoughts, Gary, as to where she stands?
I mean, I know she's trying to get back home to the kingdoms, but at the same time, it sort of feels like she doesn't really have a plan except to just march in with all these people. Like she's I wouldn't really call her crafty so much as maybe lucky, that lucky fortune. So I'm sort of curious when that luck's going to run out for her. So we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at what's going on in this episode, when the next town that you're going to takes somebody and hangs them up pointing in the direction of the town.
No, wait, they said it. What was it, 118?
Yeah. 163, I believe.
When they hang up 163 people, that's signs.
Yeah, it's kind of like a... Yeah, go ahead. Come and get us. Come here. Yeah, go ahead. I mean, you just got to look at it this way, too, is that, she started off going to Karth and all these other places to try to get an army in order to go back to Westeros and take up her rightful place on the throne. And then she kind of got into the whole thing of with the Unsullied and liberating them, which at least they're an army, But... now she's kind of becoming this kind of liberator, and they're not an army anymore. Now she's just got a lot of people following her. And I'm kind of wondering at what point along the way here, like you said, Gary, do we see this start to, that kind of conflict of interest come into play? Because, this could easily derail everything. Right now they're going from town to town and she's having easy victories, but that means that her numbers are growing. And what happens when she runs into a town like someone apparently who is very confident about their ability to deal with her because they're going, hey, come on. I just imagine that there's a point at which things are going to have to come to a head. But how they play it out is going to be interesting to see. Let's see. Moving on from there, we have got the complete opposite part of the world, which is up at the wall.
Yes,
Jon Snow in the Tribunal.
Yeah, I have to say, the inability of a good chunk of the Tribunal to accept that they might be attacked by someone. Isn't that what the whole wall and all the Night's Watch, the Black Watch, is all set up for, is to defend against oncoming attacks? And we've been warned now for a year and a half that they're coming.
Yeah, but there's also the whole sense that they've had, I believe... centuries of the wildlings not being that organized, and there's I definitely got that sense of having slipped into a certain complacency and presumption about the enemy they're facing, and they just aren't going to take Jon Snow's word for it that this dramatic shift has happened.
Well, I mean, I can understand some doubt, but the idea, they seem to doubt even the concept of it, which seems a little hard.
Yeah, it's
So it was a little weak for that aspect. But
there are things about the Tribunal I didn't like. But one thing in particular, other than the fact that they don't listen to him, which is kind of, I don't even know. But, all right, he lays out the whole invasion thing. And then the main guy, and there's that wonderful echo from Google that we get. But maybe it'll stop. Oh well. But then he sits back and he says, like, "Oh, hey, you know, the main guy on the Tribunal, you know, you killed Half Hand." And John just stands there and kind of takes it.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, why don't you defend yourself? Why don't you say something in your own defense? And he just kind of. Well, I'm Jon Snow. But
yeah, I'd.
Well, I think he's a little surprised that they don't believe him, or at least want to take something he says seriously.
Yeah, I mean, certainly Jon Snow's character has been the I would say least well developed compared to the books. But and again, I don't know if this is a case of me just reading in stuff from that I know from the books, because I don't really think this was necessarily there in the performance and characterization, but I think there is that sense of that sort of deep latent insecurity in him for being the bastard son, and when he's faced with authority at this point, he still will tend to quail and not stand up for himself, because he doesn't have the self-confidence of a Robb or a true Stark, son of Stark, given what he's been through, being beyond the wall and acting as a spy, it's his sense of identity is even more uncertain right now. So yeah, that didn't quite jump out at me as much as it did you. I kind of felt that once he was back within the walls and feeling a little defensive about what had happened, he wasn't quite ready yet to stand up for himself.
And maybe I'm just trying to. He showed a little bit of personality in this episode, so I was hoping maybe he'd do a little bit more of that. But anyway,
yeah.
Let's move on then to what was probably everyone's favorite part of the episode.
Yes. Speaking of somebody with a lot of personality,
that's right. As I called it, the Adventures of Arya and the Hound.
Yes.
Gary, why don't you get us started here? What did you think about how this played out?
I shouldn't say I'm shocked, but at the same time, it still caught me off guard how bloodthirsty and cruel that Arya has become on this journey from watching her father's be beheaded, you know, being basically, trained might not be the right word, but definitely steered by the Hound through various choices and examples has rubbed off on her in a strong way. And she's fed up, and she's not taking it anymore from anybody. her need to get a needle back, her sword, was much stronger than I expected. I went into the scene thinking the Hound was going to retrieve it for her, but she ended up getting it back herself, which was nice but surprising.
Edmund?
Certainly the whole long range of experiences and being held captive, getting going through the trials at Harrenhal and seeing people tortured and having her whole escape from Harrenhal and the possibilities that brought out. It didn't feel so much surprising to me as this was the culmination of all of these horrific things that she's been through. Certainly with her whole little prayer of all the people she wants to see dead, that she's been reciting. And this really felt like even though she's now, admittedly against her will, but has to be paired up with one of those people. she's starting to finally act on that. It was a bit surprising in terms of I wasn't expecting her to take that active a role in this particular fight. But it did make sense in terms of everything she's been through, and that it wasn't just a skulking in the shadows and just having sort of a quick moment of opportunity. She was it was a full tactical attack, taking out his legs and then taking her sword and eventually reminding him of who she was, even if it took a little while.
Definitely a great way to end up the episode. So any last thoughts on this episode as we start getting close to the wrap up here?
It's a bit of a tradition, something they kind of have to do in terms of having these opening episodes that provide a little primer to catch everyone up. And I remember, I think particularly back in second season, we bemoaned some of the attempts to do that to do that, and I think they've gotten very adept now at doing it in a way that still keeps the plot moving and keeps the action rolling along. Just going back to the beginning of our discussion, the way Oberyn was introduced, and even though that whole conversation with Tyrion was this, as you said, John, this big info dump, it still felt very, very organic to the story, and especially since it was these two major players in their houses, but not the heads of the houses. They're both sort of second or third sons. But as we've discovered, those are the ones who tend to be the more cunning and conniving and looking to make their mark where they can. So it really did keep everything flowing along. There wasn't that sense of, oh, we've got to wade through this to get to the real action.
Gary, last thoughts?
Just this episode in general was very fast-paced. I didn't feel like I got a breather through most of it. I thought it was really tight editing, and I enjoyed the constant movement around. It didn't seem to have much of a pause at all throughout the episode. And while I like all the desperate elements, I'm hoping that we can see Daenerys hopefully swing over to the kingdoms within the next year or so. I'd like to see that interaction. And I was a little bit let down that we really didn't see any more White Walkers, that we're sort of more focused on the Wildings at this point, and that's recessed a little bit. It seems so prominent as we were closing the season up that to not have it there now seems a little lacking.
Interesting. Well, not only that, but we still have plenty of other areas that they haven't really caught us up on yet. So it's amazing to think just how much they covered, and yet there are still big chunks left. Well, I think that's a good place to wrap up, especially since Google is really annoying me right now. So thank you, gentlemen, and we'll pick this up next time. Thank you, gentlemen, for all your help for this episode. And definitely, if you want to give us some comments, you can follow us on Twitter at Critical Myth, or you can go and like our page on Facebook. Again, that's Critical Myth.
You can give us feedback by visiting the website over at www.criticalmyth.com. Just check out the entries for the show and leave us a comment. If you can't find it, just go all the way up to the top of the page. There's a link there, and there is also a drop-down box for all of the shows we talk about. So please let us know what you think.
Or you can go over to the VOG Network page and go over to the forums, and we have a dedicated forum for this show. You can leave comments there for us.
You can also email your feedback to feedback@criticalmyth.com, or you can leave us a review on iTunes.
Or you can call our Google voicemail line at 908-977-MYTH. That's 908-977-6984.
And don't forget that Critical Myth's use of any and all copyright material is only intended for parody, news analysis, critique, or for educational purposes, as provided within United States Code Title 17, also known as the Fair Use Act. Please don't sue us.
And the comments and opinions of the Critical Myth podcasters and reviewers are not necessarily those of its distributors, partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. So until next time...